Dying Alive is brought to you by Game Time, your new go-to app for the best deals on last-minute tickets. Did you know that Penguin tickets, the prices tend to drop right before the game starts? Game Time tracks prices in real time from thousands of trusted sellers, then shows you all the best last-minute deals with prices up to 60% off. More than 12 million fans have downloaded the Game Time app and discovered the fastest, easiest way to get into the game. Let's say you're traveling to New York. You're going to go see the Penguins play the Islanders. You're looking to get tickets as soon as you get there. You go to the Game Time app. You're worried that you're going to get one of those crazy basketball seats that gives you a restricted view of the ice. Don't worry, because Game Time has in-app panoramic seat view photos from every section in the arena. The app is simple, quick, and easy to navigate. So head on over to the App Store or the Play Store now to download Game Time and score awesome deals on last-minute tickets. Ladies and gentlemen, they've taken my liquor license. It's the Dying Alive podcast this week. Boy, the Penguins can't figure this overtime thing out. The injury situation has become disastrous. We take a look at the week ahead around the National Hockey League, and as always, your correspondences this week, as always, on Dying Alive. Jesse Marshall, The Athletic Pittsburgh, joined this week only by my friend Patrick Damp of thepensblog.com. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Jesse. What's going on these days? How we doing?
I'll tell you what's going on these days. It's crazy out there.
It's crazy out in these streets.
It's hot out in the streets. Give a shout out to our buddy Michael, who can't join us tonight. We love Michael.
We do.
He's the best. We will push on without he and his representation from pensburg.com.
Hey, just like the Penguins themselves, this time of year, playing hurt. We're playing
fresh
hurt.
Playing hurt and fresh off a pair of overtime losses, both of which were just...
Yeah, and in their own right, too. You know, like, the first one, you blow a lead and go to overtime and lose. The second
I'm going to stop you right there, because we got to first acknowledge, in the midst of all this, something, my opinion, in a narrative that has snuck its way under the rug. At least we're going to give it, they're not going down 2-3 nothing anymore.
No. The comeback kids have learned how to hold a lead.
Well, they haven't learned how to hold one.
Yeah. They've learned how to score first. Excuse me.
They've learned how to begin a lead.
Yeah, they've learned how to get a lead, not hold
one.
There we
go. Okay. Continue your thought.
But yeah, you go from blowing a 2-goal lead and losing in overtime to coming back from down 3-2 to tie the game to losing overtime, and it sucks. It really does.
So since we've last recorded a show, we've got one win, one loss, and two overtime losses on the docket, essentially. And our results here, as far as the Penguins are concerned. So, if we want to jump to the bright spot for a second, Pat, Brian Rust, very good.
I feel like you're underselling it a little bit there.
let's put this on the table. And hottest streak of his career?
It has to be. I mean, like, yeah. I obviously don't have the numbers in front of me and haven't done research on Brian Rust hot streaks, but I mean, even with recency bias in mind, he has been unbelievable for the past, what, 5-7 games?
Steve Mears mentioned on the telecast tonight that he had the sense that Rust was going to score when he had the puck on his stick with his opportunity in tonight's overtime loss to the Islanders. And I think you're kind of at that point now. And you know, credit to him, you know, he's making the most of these transition opportunities he's given, where, you know, when I'm watching him score these goals, you know, you have the shorthanded one against Toronto, you know, where he's off to the races and kind of got mm-hmm. a really nice pass from Teddy Bluger. You've got do I have that backwards? Did Russ score that goal, or did Teddy Bluger score that goal?
I'm blanking on this, man. I went blank. Was it Brandon Tanner?
The point I'm trying to make, it doesn't matter. The point that I'm trying to make, and look at his goal, against the Islanders tonight. He's doing it off the rush, right? And sure, you have to be a little bit fortuitous to be able to do that, but you also have to be in the right position. You have to be confident in your shot. And when you look at these pucks that he's firing, Pat, these things are freaking missiles. I mean, this isn't he's not. They're not bouncing off his head and going into the net here.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean to build off of what you and Steve Mears said, that's an astute observation by him. He just has that feel about him right now that when he gets himself into a scoring zone in the offensive zone or the on the rush, you have that feel that when he has the puck, he's going to score.
Yeah,
and then to build off what you said, you can see it in his game that he just has that confidence. He's playing with that swagger that he knows he's on a hot streak. He knows everything he's doing is going the way he needs it to go, and it's there. He's playing unbelievable hockey right now.
Well, for every good, we got to give a bad.
Seems like a trend.
It's only fair. And this podcast, if it's anything, it's all about fairness.
Spoonful of sugar, spoonful of salt.
Spoonful of mustard, spoonful of ketchup.
Or what was the metaphor you made last week? It's like someone baked you a cake but put spaghetti sauce on top.
Yeah, as the icing. It's like an ice cream cake.
With what kind of topping?
What's your lactose intolerant?
Fair enough.
It's like rain. little Alanis Morissette for you. The bad is that Alex Galchenyuk, despite his accrual of several assists, has yet to score a goal.
Yeah, it's not great.
Mike Sullivan spoke about it last week at the end of the week after we recorded our last show. Here are some words that he used: work ethic, compete level, finishing the play. Not great, Bob.
And you know what? I have on several occasions voiced my disagreement with coach speak non-terms like compete level, finishing the play. But in the way in which Mike Sullivan used those for Alex Galchenyuk, he wasn't using those in doublespeak. It was a criticism. And when you're getting criticized for those things,
you know what it was?
Not positive.
Let me give you the example. It was when you were sitting at the parent-teacher conference, and your parent was roasting you to your teacher, and you knew when you left that room it was your ass.
Yeah. I mean, it was a shot across the bow for Alex Galchenyuk. It was a...
fire a warning shot across his nose.
Yeah.
Little baseball's humor for you. Go ahead.
It was Mike Sullivan basically saying, like, you are not living up to the standard you need to live up to. And Mike Sullivan is not a guy who will ever get himself entangled with fan or media criticism or anything like that, because it has been in abundance for Alex Galchenyuk. So he's not doing this to please anybody. So you know when he makes this kind of criticism, he means it. It's not a...
he's looking for it to stick, yeah.
Yeah, he is making a statement, yeah. And he is very much a coach that when he speaks, especially in that language, your ass better listen or you're going to be eating press box nachos.
Well, I'll tell you, one thing I think with regards to that too, and to be fair to the situation, is Mike Sullivan also spoke about, and he mentioned this earlier in the year with regards to Dominic Simone, by the way. So this is, I think, like the second time we've heard Mike Sullivan bring this up. But he says in his, I guess, maybe quote-unquote approach with Galchenyuk, it's to not mention the fact that he hasn't scored, right? Like, don't bring that to the forefront and make that the focal point. But here are these other things that we think you can do, that if you do them, then goals will come, right? Like, we're not worried about, you know, anything other than this process, which I think really is the way that the rudder steers the whole ship, not just the individual player, which is that's just, I think, stylistically, you know, how he's always handled it.
I think the one thing you can say, though, about Mike Sullivan is the fact that he never loses the forest through the trees. So when he says things about the process or working through things or doing the right things, playing the game the right way, however you want to describe it, right? He means it. There's no real doublespeak there. Like you said, he'll give you a lot of filler in a press conference, but there's always that one little nugget that you get out of what he says. So the way he's describing Alex Galchenyuk's game right now is not a, listen, this guy's doing all the right things, I know you guys are worried that he's not scoring goals. He's worried that Alex Galchenyuk is not scoring goals because he's not even giving him the process is there. He's doing all the right things. We got to just stick with it. He's legitimately concerned about Galchenyuk's game right now.
I'll tell you what I'm concerned about, Patrick, is looking ahead and backwards at the same time here. The Penguins are flying home tonight for the second leg of a back-to-back against the Devils at home tomorrow. And there's just something about Friday night games against New Jersey that make my stomach upset.
Yeah. I mean, just games against the Devils in general. Like, I mean, I don't think anybody in their right mind would say that the Penguins played poorly against the Devils in Newark last week, right?
No, they dominated the game outright.
But of course,
they lost.
Goalie you've never heard of, who has been pedestrian at best and awful at worst, decides to pitch a 38 save, one goal against game. And like, a lot of people love to do the, oh, you know, Pittsburgh teams, they play down to their competition. The Penguins don't do that anymore. They haven't for the better part of a decade. But for some reason, in this decade, the Devils have been the Penguins' kryptonite for God knows what reason, because they've barely been a factor for 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps the most satisfying thing that's happened recently was the Penguins playing a direct role in the firing of Mike Babcock. And if you've listened to this show before, you know that we pretty much all have takes about Mike Babcock being not as good as his reputation. So it was kind of nice that you had, on one hand, the Penguins just thrash the Maple Leafs on Saturday night in Hockey Night in Canada. First game post Don Cherry, so the whole damn country is watching. And then the following night, you had Marc-Andre Fleury completely stand on his head and rob him. The next thing you know, Mike Babcock doesn't have a job anymore.
Did you see the meme going around of, it was Fleury's Game 7 save against the Red Wings and then his save against the Maple Leafs last weekend? And the caption was, damn, who'd have thought Marc-Andre Fleury would have ended Mike Babcock's career twice?
Twice. Yeah.
But you know what, though? I know we don't like to do game, like, quote unquote game breakdowns on the pod, but we do got to talk about that Maple Leafs game. And I want to talk more about the Maple Leafs than I do the Penguins.
I'll cede my time to the representative from the Pens blog.
I thank the gentleman.
Zero days since Pat Damp has broken podcast rules.
Oh, the dumbest people, but that's not what our podcast is about. Let's talk about hockey. Did that not remind you of the final days of Michel Therrien or Mike Johnston for the Penguins, that Maple Leafs team against the Penguins that night?
Yes.
They looked just disinterested, like no interest in playing that game. And for a team as talented as Toronto to play the way they have through the first quarter of this season, I know that it's really easy to blame a coach, to blame a system, whatever. You can just tell when a team is not buying into what their coach is selling. And for the first quarter of this season, the Maple Leafs, whatever Mike Babcock was saying was in one ear, right out the other. And it was square peg, round hole.
Yeah. Well, and then Kyle Dubas, you know, Mike Babcock said it today. I wasn't his, you know, I think every general manager should have the ability to pick his own coach.
I do too. And I think that, like, it's surprising to me that he made it to this season as their head coach. Just for comments that he made all the way through last year about players acquired, what the roster has, what the roster doesn't have, what I think this team needs. Like, he undercut Dubas at every turn. And it was almost like he was just going to be petulant until Dubas fired him or Shanahan and MLSE said, you know what, we're just going to get a new GM.
Yeah. James Myrtle today from the Athletic reported that 90% of the Leafs players hated Mike Babcock.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, it really doesn't. And I said it to...
got to find out who is in that 10% and make an example out of them.
I mean, you got to figure it was some of the older guys. They probably think he's more...
Sheldon Keefe needs to bag skate those guys.
But that's the other thing.
I'm just kidding, by the way.
That's the other thing, though, is a lot of the talent on the roster, save for, like, Matthews and a couple, and Tavares and a couple others, all these guys played for Sheldon Keefe with the Marlies.
Right, and we know what kind of impact that can have.
Well, and the Marlies were...
really good.
The year they won when they won the Calder Cup in 18, that team was just dominant.
It was a hacksaw.
I got to see that team firsthand because their first round opponent was the Utica Comets, and I was still working for them at the time. And despite Utica taking them to five games because the AHL does a 5-7-7-7 format, the first round's mm-hmm. five games, Utica took them to five, and that was the biggest challenge Toronto had in that run. Like, they ran through everybody. And, since I'm not wearing for them anymore, I can say it. I was stunned they got five games. I thought that was going to be a three-game sweep.
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, that team was absolutely unbelievable, top to bottom. They were just they were a buzzsaw. And, you know, Keefe is, again, I would say this. People, I think they're getting some kind of like scientist or like new wave, you know, like fancy pants, you know, whatever. No, he's going to come on there and he's going to install a day one system that just allows that team to be aggressive. I had the opportunity to participate today in an article from Ian Tulloch of the Athletic, where we're talking to like Scott Wheeler, who covered Keefe extensively in the American Hockey League. Myself and a couple other people that were on there were just talking about coaching changes and stuff like that. And it's worth a read because Scott really went into detail about how Keefe had the Marlies playing. And when you read it and you think about what the roster looks like, you're like, okay, you know, now you're getting a harmonious relationship between coach and general manager.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say was I said it to one of the OGs of Penn's blog, Rick, the other day, was this is Bylsma coming in for Therrien for the Penguins in 2009. It's like,
I would actually say, Pat, it's more the Johnston situation. And the reason I would say that is because at the time he was dispatched or what have you, fired, Chris Letang and Sidney Crosby, who we both know are like these, you know, generational prolific talents, were posting career low numbers. And if you remember that team, it was like decidedly boring and defense heavy. And then when Sullivan came in, and it was like, we're not going to worry about defense because we're just going to spend all our time in the offensive zone.
Well, yeah, and I think the Johnston to Sullivan is actually probably more apropos just from a stylistic standpoint. But the point I was making to Rick was just that it's old school coach comes in and teaches a young roster with just a bevy of talent how to play at the NHL level. But that's not enough to get them over the line and become true contenders, because he's not going to let them play to the strength that they have, which is being an incredibly talented offensive team. He's going to put the structure in place so they know how to play in tighter games, but it's not going to be enough to get them over. And then you bring in a guy who's going to say, you know what to do in the defensive zone, but it's not going to be our focus. Our focus is going to be getting out of the defensive zone and getting to the offensive zone so we can score goals and play to our strengths.
We got to get to the penalty kill real quick too, Pat. Despite the fact that it got beat up a little bit tonight, for the first time really in the month of November and really the second half of October, the run it was on was unbelievable. And not allowing a goal isn't a sustainable, you know, thing. It's a great thing, but it's not an expectation you can carry game to game.
Law of averages say you're eventually going to give a goal up.
Yeah. I wanted to get your thoughts, and I wrote about it today. I really thought we were looking at something different from the Penguins in terms of the penalty kill. I think we are looking at something different. I think last year, you know, both at 5-on-5 and on the penalty kill, they just really focused on overloading the puck side of the ice, right? And getting more guys involved in those puck battles than the opposition had. But this year, and you saw it again tonight, strict diamond formation. One guy at the top, one guy in front of the net, defenseman, forward in the middle. They can press to the outside and keep perimeter pressure. That guy at the top, that first forward at the top of the defensive zone can kind of swing either way. Positions can interchange. When you look at the results, Pat, they're not allowing anything from the slot on the penalty kill, and I think that's the reason why.
Yeah, and I think another part of it is nobody near the top of the league, the best teams, are not playing anything other than an umbrella on the power play, right? Like, pretty much every,
right on. Yeah,
every
okay.
team is
– I like where you're going here.
Every team near the top of the league is running
out. Let me just stop you there just for a minute, though, because let's explain what that means for people that might be listening and don't know what that is. When Pat says umbrella, one guy at the point.
Yeah, one guy at the point.
Man, which would be like the handle of the umbrella, if you're thinking of it visually.
Tip of
the guy at the top of the point would be like the
tip of the umbrella.
I would argue it goes the other way. I'm thinking.
What you think about it? You have.
You can do this either way.
Yeah.
If you want, but you do your way.
It depends on where your
perspective is.
And it depends on where your quarterback is. Like,
true.
Like, let's assume that everybody's quarterback is the defenseman at the point, right? So, guy at the point, tip of your umbrella, he runs a power play. It runs through him. Two guys on each half wall, or a guy on each half wall, one on the left, one on the right. Ideally, you have a man in front of the net, and ideally, you have a rover behind the net who is kind of your safety valve, right? Mm-hmm. Play reverses in and out through him. So the best way to counter that is what the Penguins are playing on the penalty kill, which is a diamond. Guy up top, two guys kind of at the hash marks, one guy in front of the net. And because most teams are running that umbrella, the Penguins are playing a very aggressive diamond penalty kill. And this has brought them plenty of success because, one, on an intangible side of it, they have confidence in what they're doing right now. They're successful. So they're taking those risks with more authority. They're clogging the lanes, the passing lanes, the shooting lanes. So they're getting the puck from the other team. They're blocking shots. They're getting the they're intercepting passes and clearing the zone. And they're making the right gambles. They know when to be more aggressive and step up on a guy and try to take the puck off him, try to take the body, try to get in the lane a little more aggressively. And when that's happening, we see the PK that we're seeing right now for the Penguins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you think about it, or if you're running a box PK and you've just stacked two guys on top of each other, whether it's a passive box or an aggressive box, the goal of an umbrella is to get the puck to the guy in the slot. And if you're running a box, you've got an area right in the middle there that's going to be wide open, whereas with that diamond, you can better control the lane to that player in the slot. It really is a way to completely suffocate those lanes and rob people of being able to take advantage of them.
And the other thing I was going to say, the other two things I would say to that are, one, essentially, you're taking away that middle of the ice. So their power play has to operate on the perimeter. And when a power play in the NHL level has to operate on a perimeter and a goalie can see an unscreened shot, 9 times out of 10, that goalie is stopping said shot. If he can see it, he's stopping it. Secondly, Penguins have a ton of shorthanded goals this year.
4 of them, to be exact.
And the reason for that is, you think about the way the penalty kill is set up opposed to the power play that they're playing, right? One of those guys covering one of the two on the half wall, the middle of the diamond, they get a piece of the puck like they did against Toronto. You're sending yourself on a very simple, easy 2-on-1, because 3 guys are trapped low on that power play. One guy might not be totally low, but he has to get back in position all the way back to the defensive blue line to make it a 2-on-2. So you already have the numbers advantage on the way back, which the Penguins have been taking full advantage of.
Right on. And in that sequence you're talking about against Toronto,
it
was Brian Dumoulin that came up from that corner spot of the diamond to provide the pressure at the point to help Brandon Tanev, who was at the top of the zone. They worked together to kick that puck out and start that odd man rush the other direction, to your point. So,
and I mean, you know, every hockey analyst from here to Saskatchewan says it. If you win the special teams battle, chances are you're going to win games. So with the Penguins having a really good penalty kill with the power play struggling a little bit, that's a good thing.
But even the power play now is starting to show signs of life.
It's finding its groove.
It's an encouraging sign. Sidney Crosby, just as a note, we talked about this in the last show. We all pretty much thought that he would opt to get the surgery. That's exactly what happened.
I mean, you are not going to convince me otherwise. He listened to our episode and decided, you know what, got to get the surgery. The guys on Dying Alive said it. You know, I want to be ready for the stretch run. And if Pat, Jesse, and Mike say I should get the surgery, I should get the surgery.
Now, I'm not here to dispute the facts. What I will tell you is I've heard a lot of people like lean on this 6-week number. I don't think it's going to be that long.
I think it depends on, you know, I think a lot of it is feel. It's like,
well, I think a lot of it is feel, and I think a lot of it is like, what kind of shape is the team in, and can they afford to let him take his time? I'm just saying, like, based on anything specific to his situation, just based on sports hernias and recovery times, I don't think it's going to be that long.
I hope not. I hope you're right.
That's my guess. I think it'll be less than 6 weeks is my prediction.
Here's the hoping.
Yeah. But you know, where there's good, so Justin Schultz, what I suppose is a groin, based on what was reported today at The Athletic, is going to be out, you know, now quote unquote longer term. Patrick Hornquist comes back, but the law of diminishing returns is somehow in effect with you gain one and you lose one. So this is no fun. I'm not having a good time.
Bro, I am straight up not having a good time.
I'm telling you right now, religious ceremonies, Pat, you got to start. We keep talking about this. And look, here's the thing now, Pat. The longer we put this off, who else is going to get hurt?
Yeah.
What if it's one of us?
Whilst we put this off, more people are going to get hurt.
What if it's one of us?
I'm already small. I'm already small and fragile. We can't have this.
I could be hurt right now. I don't even know it.
Yeah, but you're like Terry Tate, office linebacker, playing hurt. Baby, that don't faze you.
I'll tell you what, true story. When I was a kid, my mom never let me skip school. Must be I always got like these attendance awards because my mom was like, you're just a single mom. She was like, so if my ass got to work two jobs, unless you're bleeding out of your eyeballs, you're going to school.
Oh, similar. And similar thing. First off, shout out to my mom, who is now a registered nurse. Shout out to her for getting that done.
But shouts out to Mama Damn.
But now I love to hit her with when we were kids growing up. Like, I always joked, I said, I could walk into this house with the bone sticking out of my leg and blood gushing out of my leg, and you'd be like, eh, take two Advils, put some ice on it, you'll be all right.
That's exactly it. Exactly it. It's a Western Pennsylvania mom.
But do we also, like, are we that concerned with injuries now that, oh no, Nick Bjugstad's out again?
Well, I mean, I you know, there wasn't a whole lot of contribution coming.
That's what I'm getting at. Like, yeah, so. You never want to see a guy hurt, obviously, but
no, you don't. But let's be honest. Like, Sam Lafferty's been pretty good the last.
Yeah, that's Sam Lafferty's spot now.
Yeah. So looking ahead, Devils Friday, Flames on Monday.
The Flames. How, man? We didn't. It happened between recordings. What happened with TJ Brody was terrifying.
Gross.
Did they
terrify?
I kind of lost thread of the story. Did they ever say what it was?
No, I mean, not to my knowledge. I'd be feel free to correct me on that if I'm wrong.
That's why I'm asking. I mean, for those who don't know, he was standing alone in line for a drill, collapsed and started convulsing. Yeah. At practice for the Flames, and
I'm gonna do a quick.
He was taken to the hospital and was responsive and okay, but like. It was one of those things where when it came across your Twitter timeline, it was just absolutely terrifying.
I'll tell you what, he skated today.
Extremely happy to hear that.
All tests have been reassuring. Out of danger, more tests needed.
I mean, just out of danger and skating again is extremely
dehydration.
Positive. I mean, that's really the best prognosis, right? Is the fact that it was probably just dehydration.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you can't get any better than that, in my opinion. So, Patrick, in Michael's absence, the beats are yours. I pass you the power of the correspondence and of hearing from the peoples.
Big shoes to fill here with Michael Darnay not here.
Do you have a rum and coke?
I don't, but I got Molson Canadian on deck tonight.
That's, big that's fan a of good that. Choice. That's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
So let's go to what the people are asking. First off, Mike Noor asks, is the Pens next GM already in the system, or do they need to look for outside help? I think we were all hoping for Guerin, but damn.
My vote's for outside.
Yeah, I got to go outside too. I mean, you already lost Botterill. You already lost Guerin. I think we still got a few years of Rutherford. He's earned it, especially for being inducted into the Hall of Fame, which he very much deserves. But I think that's going to be, you know, Rutherford tells them at the start of a season, hey, I'm retiring at the end of the year. Start your next GM search.
Yep.
Matt Schaefer asks, at what speed do you listen to podcasts? For me, nothing slower than 1.5 times speed. Follow up, what are some podcasts you listen to, sports and non-sports related?
I've never listened to a podcast at anything but regular speed.
Yeah, same. I think part of it is because I've listened to a good handful of shows for a long time. So if I put them at 1.5 speed, it'll just sound weird to my brain because I know how all the hosts sound, and that would just it would sound uncomfortable to me.
Yeah. I listen to a lot of Radiolab.
I'm a big fan of Pod Save America and basically anything that their company puts out, Crooked Media. I think they're pretty good. I obviously love Steve Dangle podcast. I think those guys are really good.
More Perfect.
Is that
another good one?
Bodega.
It's all about really bizarre Supreme Court cases.
Bodega Boys is good. That's Desus and Mero's podcast. That's kind of like, you can see like that's like their quote unquote writer's room. Like they workshop stuff they put on their Showtime show. So that's really funny.
Also the Football Ramble, which I believe is the best Premier League podcast you could get your hands on.
Another question. Which narrative holds more value with the podcast? Pat's unbelievably small stature, Jesse's uncanny ability to interrupt, or Mike's single-handed efforts to raise healthcare costs because he's always sick?
Well, look, here's the thing. Mike rarely goes to the doctor.
Yeah, he's rarely a guy who gets checked out. He just...
So it's not really increasing. Yeah, I just interrupted you, so maybe...
I gotta say, the narrative is me being short. I mean, come on, that gets. I think we're on. Yeah. I think we're on a whatever episodes but we're in streak of it getting mentioned, and there's another.
But if Laura was keeping track of the number of times I interrupted somebody, it'd far exceed the number of short jokes. It's just not. It's not kept as an official statistic.
Matt Cause asks, if you could change an NHL team's logo to your own original design, which would you choose, and could you describe your design? I don't know if I could say I would make my own logo, but I do think there's a couple teams that should go back to certain logos, i.e. Anaheim, go back to the Mighty Ducks logo. It's perfect. And I think the Avalanche would be well served to go back to the Colorado Rockies logo.
I would try to whip up some kind of situation where the North Stars return to Minnesota and Dallas becomes something else.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Chad asks, where does Babcock end up?
I don't think anywhere.
You think he's done?
Yeah.
I think it's a coin flip between Seattle and New Jersey.
Interesting.
I think New Jersey is horribly underachieving this year for the roster they have, despite still kind of being in the early-ish stages of a rebuild. I think there's enough there for them to at least be a playoff contender, and I think Babcock could get them there. And, I mean, with Babcock on the market, how could Seattle at least not take a look at him?
No, that's... good point.
Friend of the pod Morgan asks, most underrated Thanksgiving food. I don't know if mine's underrated.
No.
Because one, we've
I'm going to shame Morgan instead of answering this question.
Good, he deserves it.
Morgan made a take on Twitter. I saw it. I responded to it. Where he said that white meat was disgusting.
Awful take.
And that dark meat was the superior turkey meat. And that is just one of the most disgusting and obscene things. You should be jailed, Morgan, for that opinion. You shouldn't be allowed to be out in society pretending to be a functioning member. Meanwhile, you're a savage, only eating the dark meat of the turkey. I pity you, Morgan. I pity you.
Fair enough. I was going to say green bean casserole, but I don't think it's underrated. It's just good.
Mashed potatoes with the skins in them.
Oh, that, yeah, that's an underrated one. Halen asks, what should Dumo and Marino's ratings be in NHL 20? Dumo is currently an 81 and Marino a 76. Just for fun, Jack Johnson is a 79.
Marino's got to be an 80.
Has to be. Has to be at least in the 80s.
Dumo should be 83 at least.
Yeah, Dumo's got to be mid-80s for sure, and yeah, Jack Johnson should be 75.
It's fine. I'll do 78 for Jack.
Nick asks, if the expansion draft was today, who are your 8 skaters and the one goalie you're
predicting? I'm not ready for this. I'm sorry. I respect the question. I honestly do. I'm just not ready for this, man. I haven't even dedicated an iota of thought to this.
Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Murray. There's 4. There you go.
There you go.
Let's see. What else do we got here?
Ryan Rust.
That is a question. Brad asks, Brian Rust, the best player in Sid's absence or the best player in Sid's absence? Discuss.
Difficult to formulate an argument against it.
Hard to say there is an actual answer or case against that. Brian Rust, yeah. Best player in Sid's absence. Okay, I think we can end on this one. Why are Schultz's analytics so bad?
Well, what do you mean? What do we mean by this? You know, because I think he generates offense. I think it a pretty above average rate relative to the rest of the team. I think that there's a leakiness there defensively.
I was gonna say I think it might be the fact that he's been slightly underwhelming the last year and a half or so. But I also think some of that is being a victim of expectation, to where for how good he was simply also a product of the fact that you didn't have a real high bar for him to clear. So all of a sudden, sure, Everybody kind of starts looking at him like, oh, he's going to be like Chris Letang all over again. And oh my God. And then he's a second, third defenseman and people have this inflated value for him and he's not living up to that inflated value.
Yep.
That's all I got. That's the correspondences for the week. I hope I did all right in Mike's absence.
Free plugs. Read my penalty kill article.
I will plug, obviously, Penn's blog. We're still kicking. Jeff had a really good breakdown of why Jared McCann has been so good lately.
Really good.
I will also plug, with a few days left to go in the month, I'm still doing a Movember fundraiser. It's why I have this absolutely gross handlebar mustache that most of you have probably seen.
Looking thick.
Getting very close to the $200 goal that I have for it. I think I'm at 180. The reason I'm doing it, though, I know you're big on this as well, Jesse, is, you know, just mental health awareness and suicide prevention. I lost a really good friend a couple years ago to suicide and none of us saw it coming. And I really think the stigma for all that just needs to go away. And we as a people need to be better at expressing our mental health and letting people know when things aren't all right.
Amen. That's it for this week. We'll talk to you next week. We have another episode out with our All Decade Awards. Make sure you check that out. On theathletic.com and sayonara on behalf of myself and Mike Darnay. Say goodbye, Pat.
See you guys.
Have a good week.